Fun one today. We don't normally get guys from the 2000 to 2010 era. This guy is right in the middle of that. Trey Stross joins the show. Wide receiver out of Ohio. A player that had a lot of promise, a lot of potential, but just couldn't quite get over the hump of the injuries. And he talks about dealing with those hangups in his career, his best memories as a Hawkeye, and a whole lot more. Sit back, relax. Let's have a day. Let's go. Work for DePew?
Yeah, I was with DePew MyTech, the sports medicine arm. Did that for about 2 years, and you know, I got moved up to a regional manager in Amish country in Cleveland South. And when you're a 23-24 year old single guy living in Amish country, just trying to find your way out. So
that's really, I heard it was popping over there. It's the best spot to be. Night scene over there is insane.
there's a documentary about like the Amish living, and they said when you turn 18 years old, you get like a whole week of just doing whatever. It's like these folks were just doing some crazy stuff, like stuff you would expect. I mean, nowhere in like a bee,
plugging in electrical sockets, and
I'm driving a car. I'm not seeing them do any of this stuff, so I don't know. Different brand of Amish, wherever those folks were. But
I want to say my uncle. I know he's in that world. I want to say he works for DePew. So what was a casual intro? Trey Stross joins the show tonight. Welcome into the Wash Up Walk On 601st episode. You're on the backside of 600 here, Trey. Appreciate you coming on tonight. This is fun for us because normally the guys that we're bringing on, unless they're like faces on the wall in the complex, we don't get to say that you weren't a contributor, but like they're usually the All-Americans that like people are like, hey, we want to hear from Chad Greenway. We want to hear from all these guys. I think people will remember the name Trey Stross, and because we don't have those connections as much, we don't get to bring on as many guys from, you know, kind of the 2000 era. Yeah. So thanks for coming on, and we're excited to hear kind of your story about being a Hawkeye tonight.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm excited to be here. I mean, like we were talking about in the pre-show is, yeah, I mean, I've been following you guys for a while, stole your name for a little bit on fantasy football, and then, you know, again, had to change it because I just felt bad because the team wasn't doing well. but yeah, I mean, a lot of the great guys, I mean, you know, if you were to ask me the greatest athlete I've ever, you know, seen in person, you know, Chad Greenway is always top of the list. The second to him is a guy named Alex Kanellis, which globally, you know, nationally people wouldn't know, but folks in Iowa City.
Yeah. You
know, Kanellis, Division One, starting at Iowa on the offensive line and defensive line. I mean, that dude was easily first-round draft pick, first pick in the round. So those are my top two. And the number three is Andre Johnson. So that tells you how much, you know, I really think about these Iowa dudes.
Well, then, that's – Andre Johnson was a beast. You got to spend, like, a little over a year with the Texans?
Yeah, a year and a half. Yeah, not for long, you know, NFL type of thing. And, you know, just happy to have gotten to spend time with those folks, you know, nicest guy. I mean, Andre, man, like he was the silent giant. Like he was at the time he signed the largest NFL contract that year. He took care of all their, you know, receivers and just never spoke. He just worked his ass off day in and day out. Whereas you had the other guys, I won't name names, but, you know, the other five that haven't made and, you know, they would just kind of go through the ropes, you know, during the practices, but that guy was full speed all the time. So, he was just a freak of nature. You know, I had offers to sign with the Browns, Texans, Jaguars, but you know, you obviously have to go with Johnson cause you know, I had my shot, man. I could have took that from him.
I guess in every kid's dreams at some point is like, I'm going to the league. Like, yeah. School's dumb. I'm going to play football or I'm going to play basketball when I grow up. And then eventually you're like, you grow up and you're smart enough to, most guys, unless you're just a freak, you're like, oh, I might have to actually have a job at some point. I probably should have some other interests. Where did you fall in the NFL is my dream? Or was it ever like, for me, it was never a thing until like the last little bit of college where I'm like, I might have a chance to slide in somewhere. What was that like for you?
Dude, that's awesome. Like, I never thought about this until probably like 2-3 weeks ago. I never had a dream to play in the NFL like my whole life. You know, my goal, like late in my academic career, my only goal was to play D1 football. I didn't even think about the NFL. I loved watching college football. I didn't care for watching NFL. I didn't think about the money. I didn't think about anything. I wanted to play D1 football. And, you know, when I got there, it was just like, my life's goal is here. My life dream is here. And I never kind of like scoped it up. And that's unfortunate. You know, I think, in my time at Iowa, you know, you mentioned like, you know, a lot of times we talk to like, you know, the tier one guys, the All-Americans, Chad Greenways and so on. You know, back in 2025, like I was one of the, you know, part of the recruiting class, Army All-American, all Midwest, Gatorade Rookie of the Year. So I had the accolades that, you know, when I joined Iowa in my junior year, you know, we had some other All-Americans join in and, you know, we really built a special class there. But my demons at Iowa were just injury, man. Like I was trying to, you know, reflect a bit on some of the games because, you know, it's been 15 years and it's like, you know, played limited here, out the next game, played limited coming back, then you're out the next game. And it's just, you know, I never really was able to really show what I had, which was unfortunate because, you know, if you're going the forums, maybe you see like, you know, Trey was overrated, you know, maybe we just never got a
don't go in the forums, Trey. Don't do that.
I know, dude. All right. So this is the funny thing. So like, you know, as I'm doing my little research, just recall memory, I saw on Twitter, man, they have this like post of like, what is it? Great players, fans love.
Oh yeah. I don't know what you would call it. The grid.
Yeah. And like, I didn't realize it. Cause I'm really bad with Twitter. I click on something I want to read, but I'm clicking on the wrong thing. I don't know how to navigate that thing, but there was one. It was like, I was like strong contentions for average player, which, you know, I thought that was unfair. Like I sat out so many games, most hated. I'm like, dang, like
what?
Being the most hated, but also being, you know, I was all time receiver in pancakes. I mean, that's gotta be tough, man. So
what would you have done to be most hated? I don't know how, I mean, you graduate, your last season was 2009,
yeah.
And my first season was 2013. So it was, you know, about a 4 or 5 year gap there. So I had heard the name, or maybe like every once in a while a film clip comes up, or you see a roster from back or whatever, you see a picture of, you know, one of the teams from your time. Would you have done anything to actually be most hated by the, like, why would that be the case?
Yeah. So, I mean, so short story was an unfortunate game against Ohio State my senior year. You know, I ended up starting the game really hot, had two catches, and then just, you know, things kind of fell apart at the end there. And actually, I never really got to dive deep into that 15-year thing. And, you know, not being around Coach Ferentz, everything, like whenever you say anything or Coach Doyle, it's like an excuse. Now that we're adults, you know, we could talk more about, you know, what
for sure.
But that was probably like, maybe, you know, if you look at the old heads and they, you know, hear Trace Ross, that's why I'm probably getting voted up as like most hated player. But I, you know, so I thought I was like in contention, and then like 20 minutes, you know, I figured out Twitter. I realized it passed and I didn't get that. And I was kind of hoping I'd get the average player, because the next up was bad player and most hated, and I wasn't a contender there. So we're all good.
That's funny. The going back to your, like kind of how your career panned out, just, I was trying to do my research as well. Obviously a little easier for you, cause you remember the games that you played in, but from what I could tell, it did look like injuries were kind of the thing. Like You came in right away and played every game your freshman year, right? 2006. And you're playing in all the games. I mean, it wasn't a ton of production, but you had catches, you had yards. I think you scored a touchdown. Like you were doing your thing. And then you get hurt in your second year, and it looks like maybe you only played in like 8 games.
Yeah. I also ran track at Iowa, and you know,
Really?
Yeah. So the guys on the track team would call me Mr. Glassman or Mr. Bandy, cause like, you know, you walk the stairs, you get injured, and you know, it's a bad joke, but kind of true. Like, so, you know, again, I was a 4-year starter, as you saw. But you know, what you'd see is like, you know, 0 catches, 1 catch, 0 catches because I wasn't playing, and then 6 catches. So like I maybe had like full strength, and I'm out the next week, you know, so I never really had like the back-to-back weeks. So like before, you know, I got to Iowa, I had like reconstructive surgery on this fingers from a lifting accident. My first practice at Iowa, Jake Christensen, we were doing practice, we were doing a duck dive route. He throws it, I extend, I catch it, beautiful catch. But then I catch the ground and I tear my thumb. So we don't get that fixed until after spring ball. And this is like August, and we don't get it fixed till May. So rolling into my second year, I'm rolling with like a therapeutic, you know, thumb transplant and all this stuff. And then hamstring after hamstring, you know, got a tendon in my pinky in the middle of my hand. So, you know, I'm a receiver with like no feeling in my hands.
You were banged up, man.
Yeah. And then I got, you know, the plate here from the broken bones aren't a big deal because broken bones, they heal, you know, your date, but hamstrings is like, you pull a hamstring, you're out for 5 days, you're out for 15 days, you're out for 30 days because it's just lingering. And so that was kind of like my Achilles heel was my hamstrings. And yeah, that was it, man. Like the running joke was like, I was a 4 year starter, but never, you know, really played in the first four games of the season. My senior year, you know, we had Coach Campbell come over. He kind of knew the story. He saw me in spring ball and all this. During 2 days, and this doesn't seem like on Iowa's brand, like I wouldn't even practice the second practice because they kind of wanted to put me in bubble wrap until the game. And you know, we had a stable, we had like me, McNutt, DJK, Colin Sandeman, like we had like the stable that they could just like let it roll and see. But you know, they kind of knew, like, you know, the track guy that, you know, I had the size, the speed, the jumping ability, you know, things like that, that, you know, they wanted me to be healthy to, you know, compete for, you know, Big Ten championship and like that. So yeah, never had to do 2 days my senior year.
Man,
not a Doyle or Iowa, you know, thing, but
I would love to hear what Coach Doyle had to say about that now. He was always looking for ways to get guys in doing more. You mentioned your athletic ability, and yeah, you're kind of a prototype that, God, we haven't seen in a while as far as receiver goes. Did you win high school high jump?
Yeah, I was state champion in high jump, and I was a state contender in long jump as well, but actually I have a picture hanging up. So like I won the state high jump wearing with a pulled hamstring, and I had like the brace.
Oh my God.
So then, we went to long jump and you get six jumps. You get three to qualify and then three for the championship. And on my third jump, I qualified for the championship, but my third jump, dude, it completely pulled. I went head first into the pit. I was just like covered in sand, and I was just so on cloud nine. And you know, I'm going to Iowa. I'm not going to keep pushing it for a long jump thing in high school. So I just basically said, hey, you know, I'm good with whatever I got placed, there. But, yeah, man, it was a jumper. Like, you remember, those, what was it called? Like during the summertime, we do like Ironman or whatever, like skill position Ironman.
Yeah. 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 Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, like that was like, you know, maybe it is going back to maybe I was more of an athlete or more of a track guy than a football player or something. But, you know, from freshman to senior, I was always top three just because I, you know, I had the vertical, I had the broad jump, I had, you know, one of the best cleans, one of the best.
You're a pro day guy.
Yeah. Pro day guy for sure. Yeah. I mean, we had the pro day and like, I had the number one, you know, pro agility in all the NFL at the time. You know, I ran a 4.440, which was like, you know, top five. You'd probably have to, you know, fact check me on this stuff. And then the vertical broad jump, I was, you know, top three. So definitely a track guy. But you know, I felt like I had some good football IQ. I was definitely a student of the game. I was, you know, always, you know, watching film and things like that. I don't know, maybe I was more of a coach because my body wouldn't let me run.
Well, I it's interesting because my schooling was based around exercise science. That was my major. And I mean, every once in a while you come across athletes who are just, honestly, you see it a lot in the NFL now because they're so explosive. They're so powerful. They're so fast that sometimes you almost out athlete your like tendons and muscle capability. And I wonder if you were just that kind of guy. It really sounds like it was, because like, I remember seeing your name on the board. I think your name was still on the board when I came into and maybe even when I left, like for one of the records up there, like you said, you were strong. What are you? 6'3"?
Yeah. 6'3". I was like 205. I'm still 205, but the weight from here went down to the dead bod. So
sure. Sure. Nice. And I mean, at the time, like obviously 6'3" shredded athlete D1, like I just 4.4. What did you jump?
So I jumped to 6'11" and 3.4s because they, you know, in college they do like the oh dude, you should see the film. It is like hilarious because I never practiced high jump. I just, you know, it came to Iowa. I had to do it my freshman year, sophomore year, just to keep myself out of downtown. I love competing, like, and you know, gosh, my daughter's going to watch this, you know, probably a couple of years from here now. And, but you know, I get to compete against people that practice all year round and I just, you know, get the hop in.
Sure.
And there's girls, you know, in this sport. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to do track. So, you know, but long story short, like whether it's high school or college, like in the high jump, you do this, like it's called a J curve where you run continuously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then jump over. Dude, like I never had a spot. I just kind of eyeball it. I would, yeah, like maybe like if I was doing like a basketball layup and I would come to a complete stop and then just jump and I would kick my legs in the air. And, you know, people thought it was like, you know, some sort of like magical new, you know, technique. And I thought maybe I'm just stepping on like the air, you know, to get me over the bar, but I had the worst technique, but it just felt so good that you're, you know, competing in the Big Ten, beating folks or winning state in Ohio, people that, you know, practice day in and day out. And, you know, you just kind of get to show up and do it.
You were just literally out athleting people. Like you were that guy.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's, you know, I did work out hard, man. Like I, you know, I won Iron Hawk, which a lot of like receivers don't win. It's usually
it's tough.
Yeah. And like, so I worked out hard, but like I was blessed, man. Like my mom, she was, you know, all state, you know, hurdler. My dad was, you know, all state Ohio, you know, quarterback and, you know, things like this, but they had my sister when they're like 17, 18 years old. So they never really got the, you know, kind of see the late, you know, they went parenting over athletics. And, so I was, you know, blessed with those genetics, but, you know, I didn't want to, you know, take them for granted. So I liked competing, like beating people. So I did track for 2 years, we could talk about it later, but I started developing this foot issue that I had to like walk away from track, but I love track. It was so fun, man.
You have all these injuries, yeah, hamstring, foot, how did you get a plate in your collarbone?
Yeah. So, I mean, I got through, you know, hamstrings and, you know, I had a foot injury that year that, you know, we really didn't know what was going on. So they just kept throwing, you know, pads in it. They, you know, I'd get cortisone shots and steroid pills. Like I was just loading up and everything just to stay on the field. And, so we play against, South Carolina in the bowl game, score the, you know, first touchdown of what was it, 2009. And then the next play I go crack, safety. I thought he wasn't seeing me coming. So I'm loading up and he just puts his helmet like right there, taking three spots. I was donezo. So yeah, even with all the bull prep and I was healthy, ready to roll, like my time to shine and show folks, like, let's look forward to next year. Shattered my collarbone. So, but that wasn't bad, man. Like literally next day surgery, I was back in like what, 6-8 weeks or so. Like, so I would take a broken bone any day.
Sure. Sure. I get that. Yeah. Well, you mentioned the hamstring troubles. The hamstrings are horrible because it just constantly feels like you're going to pull it off the bone again until it's 100%. Going back, when did you realize as a kid that you were just a step ahead of everybody else athletically? Like, what was that early, like elementary school? You're like, okay, I'm the best out here.
Yeah, it was probably when I hit middle school. You know, my parents did a great job. Like, I always played up a division in baseball, basketball, wrestling, football. So I was always going against older kids. Once, you know, quick story. So my brother's 3 years older than me. So we played like biddy football and I was like his tight end and receiver.
Yeah.
You know, his team. So I was playing up, you know, two, and, you know, understanding I have young parents, they probably just did that not so much for like the academic, or athletic, advantage or practice, but more so probably just, you know, one drop off type of thing.
Yeah. No, as a parent now, I that's coming and I'm like, yeah, just, hey, one practice.
But yeah, growing up, I mean, but even with that, you know, I was seeing success, but I didn't know, like, you know, if I was actually like head over heels better than everybody because, you know, they're a lot older than me, but I was getting some wins here and there. When I got into middle school and you're playing against everybody in your own age, that's when I was like, oh, like, you know, I can probably take this a step farther and need to look at, you know, D1 programs and stuff. So, you know, big basketball, baseball, you know, football guy, you know.
Played all three through high school?
Yeah, well, I quit baseball and football my sophomore year, just to focus, or yeah, baseball and basketball my sophomore year.
Okay.
Just to, you know, start focusing on football. But yeah, I mean, I played ever since I was 5 years old.
I mean, Ohio is outside of Florida, Texas, California. I feel like Ohio is the place that people go to next. Where like, this is a football state.
Yeah. I mean, especially back then, man, because, you know, we had like the Ted Ginns, Mario Manninghams, you know, in my class, you know, Brian Hartlines and myself, Brian Robisky, you know, we had some Freddie Lennox, you know, Jamar O'Neal. Like, we had some studs.
Great tight end prospect.
Steph Curry was born like 30 minutes from LeBron. Like, you know, so we, you know, we were putting out some, you know, athletes and stuff. And, you know, my high school coach, at the time was, he turned out to be the head strength, speed and strength coach for Ohio State, Eric Licker. So, like, and I had like the training too. So it was highly competitive. And everybody talked about, you know, Florida, California, but man, if you just take that demographic of like how big Florida is, how big California is, you put it in that Northeast, you encapsulate, you know, Chicago, Ohio, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, dude, we put out some talent. And what I love about it, cause I coached in Texas and I'm out here in California now, is like these kids at like 6 years old, 7 years old, they just specialize in football. Like they're doing spring ball. They're watching film in Ohio, the Midwest. Like, dude, you're doing wrestling, football, baseball, basketball. Like, and I think there's just so much more of an advantage because as you grow up, your personality changed. Like, I was a huge basketball, baseball guy. And then I almost quit football my, you know, eighth grade year because I wanted to focus on the other. And, you know, luckily
I was just going to say, I feel like with your athleticism, you were probably pretty decent on a basketball court. Like, you probably dunked before all your friends. Like,
yeah, I mean, the first time I dunked was in the eighth grade, and
must be nice.
Yeah, me too, man. Yeah.
Me and Grant collectively are still waiting for our first dunk, so it's gonna happen here.
Oh man, I don't know if I'm gonna put this guy on blast, but like I was in eighth grade, so I was going to a school called Avon Lake and a huge football program, but they're good at all sports. Like they went to state and basketball and a few other sports, but. In the eighth grade, the varsity coach like threatened to cut me because he's like, "You don't play my style," type of thing. Because you know, growing up, we lived in a lot of different. We lived in Cleveland, went to North Olmsted, North Ridgeville. So I'm listing all these cities you don't know, but I always moved. So the moving part gave me like more and more confidence of like, you know, I was the best at this school. So I was taking out the counties. So what he was mentioning was, you know, I wasn't playing his style was because I was a little bit more, you know, flashy and, you know, if there's a full court press, I would just, you know, go East Coast to West Coast with it type of thing instead of pass it three times before I shot it. So I didn't go to that football school. I went to a basketball school, Larry Catholic, and, you know, quickly started getting some looks from some college teams as a freshman because I played varsity, JV and freshman. They just kept changing my number every week. To stay compliant.
Like we need this guy in the court every night.
And then so then they hired a, you know, a wing T coach, and you know, I was kind of like a DB slash receiver, you know, wannabe receiver. So I knew I had to go back to Avon Lake knowing that, you know, I'm not gonna get along well with this this varsity coach. And then again, long story short, go to Avon Lake, basketball season comes along, still a huge basketball guy. You know, it's not all on him. It's me too. Like I was a butthead, immature kid. He's like, "Hey, we're going to move you up to varsity." And I said, "No, man, I'm good. Like, I think we'll win more games on the JV team." And,
wow.
Yeah. So I was no innocent guy. It's just like, you know what, the best way to explain this, I tried to talk to my dad. Like, so the coach, like he was a college coach. Like he trained his kids like college kids. He expected their maturity to be college kids. And, you know, I'm 14, 15 years old, and he's, you know, threatening to cut me in the seventh grade. He kicked me out of an open gym because I decided to go Larry Catholic. And he's like, every time you play, an Avon Lake person will sit out. So I'm like, I just don't like this guy. But yeah, so that was my, he did come up to me again, good intention. He said, "Hey man, like, you know, I know you could dunk. I want to see you dunking more in games." And I was like, cool. So I wore my own shoes. You know, the last game of the season, because the shoes that we had were just really bulky, and he didn't let me play. And I was like, "All right, I'm done playing basketball." So the next week we're preparing for football. He came to the gym. So you come into practice for the playoffs. And I was like, "I'm good, man." So it was a maturity thing. Like, you know, we just didn't really mash up well. But yeah, basketball was my thing back in the day.
That's crazy. Football, when was the first legitimate, like, "Oh wow, colleges are talking to me for football"? Like, when did you have an idea, like, I might be a lock for the next level here?
Yeah, so that was a sophomore year. Because I did go to a football school that, you know, we were super lucky, man. We had Mike D'Andrea, the number two prospect in the nation. He got offers from, you know, every single school in the nation. He's between like Notre Dame, Ohio State, Nebraska at the time.
Jeez.
So we had programs coming there, and but with that said, it's very, very rare for a sophomore to start at a program like this. And you know, I was a starter, and you know, I started on both sides, defense and offense. And you know, I started getting some letters from, you know, Cincinnati, West Virginia. And, you know, Ohio is kind of a cheat code, man, because there's so many MAC schools. So you're going to get, you know, the offers. So you're already going to start off with like 10 offers.
Because the whole conference is basically in Ohio.
Right. And then, you know, sharing the border, you have Pitt, and then you have West Virginia, and, you know, Cincinnati was on the up. So, you know, I was rolling in some offers there. That kind of made it easier to, you know, kind of put a pause on basketball as well. So in my freshman year at Lehigh Catholic, I got a call from Wisconsin and Pitt, which I thought were, you know, huge for a freshman.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, sophomore year is when I really, you know, kind of dialed in and say, hey, football is going to get me to my dream, you know, playing a Division I sport.
So you had all the offers basically by the time you were a junior, senior.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I actually, my dad did a great job. I mean, again, hindsight, I wish I had a little bit more like, you know, hey, Trey, do this, do that type of thing. But he gave me like full responsibility of what I wanted to do. And, you know, I committed to Maryland, like right off the bat, before even seeing the campus. And, you know, I'm a junior, committed to Maryland, go out there to, meet the coaches, see the campus. Campus was not, you know, coming from Cleveland, then living in the suburbs, you go out to Maryland, you go to the mall, and there's like 3-inch glass proof, you know, everywhere. And there's a basketball court in the mall. I'm like, hey, maybe not my spot. So my next visit was at Iowa. And I mean, it's everything you could dream of, man. They had Herkies everywhere. I mean, there's a lot of pride, and like, it's just night and day better. I was like, man, this is the spot I need to be. And then we had, you know, Ed Hinkle out there, Matt Malloy, like some studs that we can learn from, replicate. Clint Solomon was an awesome mentor at the time. So yeah, I mean, I flipped to Iowa, you know, basically as fast as I could.
Man, there were some dogs. All those names are guys we need to get on the show. The plus McNutt, plus freaking DJK. Wow, the receivers were really, you guys were not a slouch position group. And I know, like, as of late, that the passing game has been a tough go of it. Even back to, you know, the mid 2010s in my time, it wasn't like we were tearing the roof off the building with our passing game, but you guys had a room, man. That's crazy.
But it was interesting because, you know, I think my senior year we started launching the ball a bit more, but those first 3 years, you know, I came from Avon Lake. That give you guys a little like information about that city. Like, our running back rushed for 3,100 yards. We ran the ball like every. And, you know, you had me, you know, commit to Iowa. Then my counterpart, Andrew Means, he was a D1 athlete committed to Indiana, and he also played baseball at Indiana, and he got later signed by the Cincinnati Reds. So he had, like, two D1 receivers, running back with the Air Force, but we just ran the ball, like, nonstop. So I go to Iowa, you know, because, like, it's something I know, you know, it's a, you know, running style. But, man, those 3 years, it was just, like, run, 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 tight end, tight end, tight end, run, 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 tight end, tight end, tight end. So, yeah, I mean, I think all the receivers would probably tell you, man, we wish we got the ball more. But
well, I think the fans would tell you that too. I think that's honestly, you know, and love KF. His style is his style. And I think especially now, I mean, back then you might have had an argument for it. I mean, did pretty well. Had guys like Sean Green and a couple other guys who were running it all over the place. But with how football has modernized the 15 years since your career, I definitely think that getting the receivers involved has become a contentious point. And I mean, you've seen them do it over the last couple of years. I think upcoming this year, it's going to look more different than it has in a long time. It sounds like, I don't know how much you pay attention and follow it, but it sounds like out of the spring game a couple of weeks ago, the receiver group is like the most surprising, and they were throwing it all over the field compared to what we have been. So that's exciting as a former wide receiver, maybe some guys that are catching some balls, you know, making up for what you didn't get, you know, 15 years later. You did. I mean, it looks like, I don't have your stats pulled up, but it looks like in your third or maybe your second year where you played like 8 games, you still had 4 touchdowns or something like that. Like, you were, I think you had 16 catches and four of them were touchdowns. You were like every fourth catch was a tutty. It's crazy because it's like I think more so than anything, without even knowing who you are, you look at your stats and you're like, damn, there was so much potential there. And without those injuries, and then what happened? Like junior, senior year, you just couldn't get back to any kind of rhythm.
Right. So I mean, even the sophomore year, I think the sophomore year, you know, the demon there was just hamstrings. So like you'd see like the choppy game where it's like zero because I didn't play, or like limited, and then four catches, then limited because hamstring, and then six catches. Like it was definitely like the kind of like, you know, given the tease of like, hey, here's what he can do. And then junior comes around and again, just, you know, the injuries, you know, kept me out. You know, we had a coaching change, you know, with you know, Coach Campbell coming over.
Who was the coach before that?
Coach Herb.
He was coaching receivers.
Yeah. And Coach Herb, man, like he was a very good coach because, and the reason why I say that is because, you know, with my experience in the NFL, like, you know, we had Coach Kirksey. He coached, you know, Andre Johnson, obviously. He coached Andre Rison, Andre Davis, so all the Andres, and then Jerry Rice and all that. So he allowed, like, you know, more like, you know, kind of freedom of your routes, right? You know, blindsiding DBs, you know, get through blindside, you know, play the ghost man. Whereas Coach Campbell is very he was more on the vertical aspect. Just look like you're running, you know, straight, make everything off of that route. So, you know, I think that, you know, Coach Herb kind of, you know, played to more of me because if you would bring up like Amari Spivey on the show, another stud, you know, probably the best DB I've gone against, you know, trying to think about the best DBs, and it's like him and Vontae Miller. Literally, like, he'd like, Trey's got like the best double moves because, like, you know, you had that freedom to like really kind of play the DB.
Sure.
Whereas when Coach Campbell came around, it was just a different philosophy. It's just everything needs to look like a go route, which again makes sense. I'm really close friends with Brian Hartline, and he's a true believer of, like, you know, again, stemming routes. He's about, you know, changing speed, like, you know, run fast, slow down, then run fast to stack the guy. So there was a little bit more art to the game when it came to like Herb and like a Hartline.
Sure.
You know, Campbell is just, you know, very like, hey, you know, just stay on the straight line. And, you know, and it's not a hit on him. Like if you brought McNutt and DGK in here, that, you know, they would love Coach Campbell. Honestly, with my foot injury that I was experiencing my junior year, which to answer your question, like I had this like really, really bad, you know, foot pain my junior year. And it got so bad that like I got the nickname Skip, and it came from like a girlfriend at the time because like she just watched me, and like every time I decelerated, I was like skipping because I couldn't decelerate without it like getting like pain in my leg. So like I couldn't do this stuff that I used to do. So I had to like make everything very, very vanilla. Which again was fine because just vertical, do your comeback, you know, type of thing. But yeah, Coach Herb, man, he was a very, very good receiver coach.
And then he shifted over to running backs, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, when Michigan had their they fired their head coach Lloyd Carr at the time, so like there's big, you know, staff shuffle, and you know, that was our chance to bring like a Michigan, you know, level type of coach over to Iowa. You know, he would place him in as receivers because he coached, like, you know, some big time guys like Adrian Arrington, Mario Manningham, and you know, so on. It just kind of, you know, made sense. And, you know, Coach Herb is smart, man. He can get it. He's coached many positions in the past type of thing. I think they moved him over to running backs, I think.
Yeah. Special teams, because he was who, when I came in then 4 years later, after you were gone, he was kind of who I was in contact with because he kind of was in charge of punt at that time.
Yeah.
And so he was the running backs coach. And then he recruited me, and then he left the following year when I came in. And went to Nevada, and they brought in who we had for several years then. But yeah, he seemed like a great guy. He was awesome in recruiting. I liked him. Him and Coach Morgan. Coach Morgan recruited everybody, I feel like. But yeah, that's crazy. I mean, senior year, you were still productive, like pretty productive.
Yeah, I mean, I did what I could, man. Like my senior year, I mean, if I had a, you know, few regrets at the time, like, you know, speaking of like the 2 days where they put me in bubble wrap type of thing, like even in the games, man, I felt like I was just operating at 90%, just to be present, just to, you know, put out a full season. And
yeah,
you know, I luckily was able to. My senior year was a full season I was able to put together, but you know, again, like, you know how it is being an athlete. Like you always think about like the games that missed opportunity versus like the successes. And there's like,
yeah.
I know like specifically, you know, Penn State, Michigan State, there was like these catches, that the ball wasn't maybe intended to me, but I could have ran over and got it type of thing. But again, I was just so prudent. So like Michigan State, for example, like, the way they did their DBs is really weird. Like they play inside coverage. And so we were just like attacking the hashes and going up. So like me and Darrell, and, you know, I had like three steps on him, like on every play. And, you know, Sanzi would throw to him. I'm like, dude, and I would inch over. And I just would never go for it. And if I just went for it, dude, we would have been in better shape. But I didn't, because my first touchdown ever at Iowa was my freshman year against Wisconsin. And it's a go route to clear out the tight ends. We have Scott Chandler.
Yep.
And so I'm like running my go route. I see the ball in there. I'm like, dude, I'm going to get it. So I jumped up, catch it, get touchdown. I get over the sideline. Coach Ferentz is like, Ken O'Keefe's like, you got to clear it out. That was supposed to go to Chandler. You know, I thought he was going to celebrate my first touchdown.
Man.
But that's the thing is like, you got to be a good partner. You got to clear it out for your boy. But that was my first thing. So in my head, I'm senior year, I'm running. I'm like, the ball's in the air. I'm like seeing Darrell's like, you know, kind of a couple of yards back. It's like right there. I'm like, come on. And I inched over and I would just stop. So it's just things like that. And, you know, same thing with Penn State. Like, it's just, I know there was a few things that I probably could have got to, and I didn't because of the prudency of the injuries and stuff.
So. That's tough. Like you go through that. And I mean, fortunately I never had to go through that. So personally I don't relate, but had a lot of teammates that went through a lot of injuries. I can name like two or three off the bat that I know would be in the NFL if it wasn't for their body, like kind of failing them, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, was that mentally challenging? Was there ever like some tough times where you're like, I don't know if I can do that. Like, I don't know if I can go through this anymore. What was it like in your head?
Yeah. So that's a great thing. Yeah. I want to be, I want to be thoughtful on how he responds, but 100%, man, like, the challenge of being hurt all the time. And if you brought in like a Jordan Bernstein, like, he's another guy that just, was out on the sideline a lot, and he was like, he made it to the NFL, but like that dude was a freaking stud, dude. Like he was like a first, second round draft type of talent, and
injured, for sure.
It dropped to, that. But when you're on the sideline, man, like, that brotherhood, that connection, you just feel like an outcast, and it pushes you to get back on the field. But when you're just involuntary and silent week after week after week, man, you don't feel connected. And that was even my time with the Texans, man. Like, my claim to fame on the Texans was, I was this rookie, 6'3", 4'4", like I fit their brand. Like they had all tall receivers. Whereas like the Browns, they would have like the smaller, faster guys type of thing. And we had the tall dudes, but I had the height and the speed. And the reason why I chose the Texans was because, they had a lot of expensive resources. So you get me a rookie cheaper, type of thing. But, when they discovered like, oh shoot, like you have a partially dislocated foot and it looks like you've had it for a while. So they actually found out that at Iowa, my past few years, I had a partially dislocated foot that I was, running on.
Jeez.
They did what they could. They're like, hey, we're going to put you in a cast. We're playing the Vikings. I'm back. I'm feeling good. I run a 60% slant route. Pops, could be scar tissue, whatever, but they're like, hey, we have to put some screws in this. So for like the whole entire year, we're having a pretty good season. I think that year we started out like 5-0 and everything, and I'm just like I'm in the medics again, like all day every day, and I just felt detached. And so when we got out of the lockout, I basically just called it quits. I'm like, hey, like I don't want to do surgery again. And to be honest, like it's maybe one of those instances where you quit before you get fired again.
Sure.
I do all the surgery, come back, and they just cut you the next week. But it's disheartening. And again, you feel so removed from your brothers that are out there, competing, being together, getting better. So that was definitely a tough part.
You played with a lot of dudes at Iowa. You mentioned Anger as one of them. He's sort of the character. It feels like he's the character of that that era. What are some of the memories that come back to you when you think of those years? when you think of guys like Pat or other guys off the field or in the locker room, what are some of the fonder things that come to mind when someone asks you like, oh, what was your time like in Iowa City?
Yeah, I mean, it was, we were a close-knit group. I mean, especially like my class, you know, me, Pat Anger, you know, I mentioned Alex Canellis, who was just another, you know, animal of an athlete, but, you know, just a core unit of the class. But man, we got chopped up. Like we were sixth in the nation in recruiting class or something like that. And, you know, arrests, dropouts, you know, things like that. You know, we got slaughtered. I think we graduated like 9 of the OGs, but
wow.
You know, Pat was, you know, kind of the anchor. I mean, he was a character, but he was the character that, you know, pushed everybody to be, you know, tough. You know, he basically wore the Iowa, I mean, he lived day to day, like the Iowa mindset, and that's what kind of wore off on all of us. Like, you know, we all heard the famous quote of, you know, Rick Stanzi at the Orange Bowl, like America love it or leave it.
Yep.
Pat's been saying that for 4 years, but you know, Pat doesn't get credit for it because I think people are so nervous what he would say on the mic. That's why it's so hilarious. He's like doing anchor stuff now.
Yeah. Back then it was, you definitely don't want him mic'd up, but he's really turned a lead. I mean, I don't know if you've listened to him, his broadcast. I don't think he cussed one time last year.
Attaboy. That's awesome, man.
It's crazy.
Cause he's a dad now, man. He's setting the right example.
Oh dude. He's got like 3 or 4 boys that are, or like 3 boys that are just like animals.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is like, psych, you know, I've lived with Pat, Amy, you know, Pat's been, you know, my closest guys, you know, since those days. I'm like, dude, going into this call, like replicate Pat. But, you know, here I am. Yeah. I got 2 girls and they're going to watch this. I'm like, yeah, here I am. I've got like my beer and, you know, throwing some Zins and like, so I'm probably not doing a good job, but like, you know, just, you know, Pat growing up is awesome. And, you know, my 21st birthday, like I wasn't a big drinker until, you know, at the foot injury, then I was just like, yeah, let's just, you know, enjoy this Iowa City type of thing. My 21st birthday, I went to Pat's place and, you know, they're drinking, him, Canellis, gosh, what's the other dudes? Long story short, I was the sober driver downtown and
they used on to your birthday.
Yeah. Because I would, you know, dude, I was the guy that I used to like drive like my track teammates or football teammates downtown so I could play like their, you know, Xboxes and play Call of Duty. And then I'd pick up type of thing.
I was the same as you, by the way. I did a lot of trips to downtown and back. And I on my 21st birthday, you know, you get like, I don't know if they did this back then, but they did like pitchers at Spoko. You get like 21 pitchers.
Yeah.
I didn't have a drop of 21 pitchers, but the whole team that was there that night got my 21 pitchers of beer and they loved it. So it's a similar story.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, we're at Pat's apartment and like everybody's having a good time. I think Sandeman's on his like official visit. So this is going to make it really interesting. So Pat and Alex, strange dudes. I mean, we all know that, and that's what we love about them. They have these like medieval swords or something. In that moment. And long story short, like a few people got stabbed, you know,
that doesn't surprise me in the least.
It's just as a joke. So then like, here's me, the sober guy. I have no medical kit. So I have like duct tape. I'm duct taping people's hands and everything. And then we go downtown. So we're all like bandaged up going downtown, dropping them off so I can, you know, go crush some Call of Duty. But, yeah, man, Pat was he was a fun time, but you know, again, he's a honorable dad right now.
Great era of Call of Duty too, by the way. Is it funny to think back to then when you were young? And I mean, everyone's such a dumb kid when they're 20 and 21 and know Pat, who he is, or even some of your other teammates. Like I'm doing this now because all the guys that I played with were just turning 30. Everyone's having kids now. And it's so funny to have known them as 20-year-olds and now see them as parent 30-year-olds. Is that so weird for you too?
All the time, man. Like, you see like a Facebook post of, you know, XYZ with their kids and family and like a quote, you're like, dude, I know you way before that.
Yeah. And I know things about you that this does not make sense at all. Right. Like
this dude stabbed someone with a sword. Now he's got kids.
The first Pat Anger story that I ever heard was from Casey Kreider. I don't even know if I can tell the story, because I respect Pat so much and I don't want to tell the story. So like, and it's just funny that he now has, 4 kids and, or 3 kids and he really is like the all American dad. He's great. And it's great that he is on the mic now. Him and Dolph are fantastic. When you think back to your career, even though it was injury riddled, what are the games that come to mind, the moments that stick out to you from specifically on the field?
Yeah, I mean, the senior year was obviously special. I mean, you know, making it to a BCS bowl. I think, you know, when you commit to Iowa after like the Chad Greenway era and Dual Hodge and all that, you know, 2-time Big Ten champs, 3-time eighth in nation, like you expected more of them. And, you know, we had some trials, man. Like, you know, the first year, I think we lost Big Ten title by 2 plays. It was an onside kick against Northwestern, a few drops against, you know, Michigan type of thing. So that's cool. You know, it happens type of thing. And then sophomore year, we had that was a rough team, man.
Yeah.
But that was attributed to, like, you know, losing folks like Canella due to injury and like some other folks for schooling. I think, you know, Sean Green was gone. Like, so we were like bleeding out that year too. So it's not even a hit on that team. It's just, you know, again, another name that you guys may have to look up that, you know, people forgot about was Javon Pugh. Javon Pugh is like a Sean Green built body and speed, but with an Albert Young moves. And he got homesick and went back to Florida.
Ah.
Like, imagine having him, you know, if Sean still goes to the NFL in junior year, you know, imagine if Sean stays a senior year, like, you know. And then, like, you know, you just go down the list of the guys we had, like Dominique Douglas, another, you know, standout receiver, and James Cleveland, another stud. And, you know, we bled out that year. And then junior year, started off rocky. We made a QB switch, and there's growing pains when you make that switch, and you got through that, and then winning streak, right? That really set us up for the senior year of what we did. So, senior year was just, you know, special all in all. Like, you know, the senior year thing, each game was adversity. I mean, like, coming from Cleveland, there's a famous team called the Cardiac Kids, because they'd always just pull it out at the end. And that was us, man. Like, Northern Iowa, we had to block 2 field goals to win.
Wild. We used to watch that film still to like my senior year, just as like, God, that was great.
We had Wisconsin that, you know, 6 of us, like starters, like me, Moyaki, Spivey, like we had the swine flu, and like we could hardly breathe. Like, we were like on oxygen tanks. And we pulled that out, you know, getting like, you know, for myself, I was, you know, special for me because I was able to have like 2 crucial third down conversions to set up for a touchdown the next play, set up for a field goal the next play that got us over the top. You know, the Georgia Tech game, classic Trey, I you know, in practice, I tore my MCL and LCL, still got the play, you know, got the third down conversion to seal that game. But the most special game was my sophomore year. And we ended up losing, but long story short, growing up in Cleveland, my family's from Pennsylvania, so they always thought I'd go to Penn State. And my grandma used to take me to the stadium and say, like, you're going to play here someday type of thing. My grandpa passed away the week before. And sure enough, I had an injury. I was sidelined. We're playing Indiana. We're losing. The receivers are dropping balls. They're missing, you know, blitzes, stuff like that. I just ran out on the field. There's like 2 seconds left. They're doing a Hail Mary. I ran out on the field. I took the X roll. Nobody said anything. Nobody called timeout. They didn't, you know, take me out. Ended up scoring a touchdown. And maybe this is another reason why Iowa fans hate me, but they caught it, scored a touchdown. I slammed the ball because, you know, frustration, hurt, you know, that ball went. Like, they didn't have those press boxes where we have, but I think the ball like went up, you know, that high type of thing. So Coach Johnson wasn't too happy about me with that. But the next week at Penn State, my hamstring was still just jacked up, but my grandma came into town, you know, my grandpa just passing. So I had no other choice, man. So I took the pills, took the shots, and I just, you know, grinded through that. And I'm giving like 5 catches, had the, you know, got that touchdown. I got player of the game on the losing side, but again, that was just like a special kind of family, personal, you know, moment for me. The other, you know, just a fun one, I think, you know, the IPA's kicking in type of thing, was Iowa State, you know, senior year. Had a good game. Had 3 or 4 catches, whatever, got player. So like, I was one of those receivers. I got player of the game 2 years my senior year. Not even so much for like the catching, but for the blocking.
Well, you said earlier you're like the all time pancake leader, if true, and I'm sure that there's merit to it. There are some guys that, because Iowa not known so much for the receiving numbers, some of these guys buy into the blocking. And man, I played with some dogs far as blocking receivers. So I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a self proclaimed thing. But to give you a little backstory, so like. Coach Campbell, man, like he was a hitman type of guy. He gave us all a OKR, you know, our objective key result type of thing.
Yeah.
To take out DBs. Because he was a former DB. He's like, we hate when you go after our knees. So he gave us like 3. And like my goal every single game was to get 6 of them. So I just went after these DBs and stuff. So, you know, some of my highlights that I used to send like NFL teams are just showing me like getting somebody out, you know, of Sean Green's way or Wagner's way and things like that. But dude, honestly, man, if we ran the stats, if they cut the stats, I think I would be, you know, up there. But I took pride in blocking ever since, you know, high school. Like, again, we had that 3,100 yard runner, and I used to love just throwing people into the stands type of thing. But yeah, so I might be one of the only guys that got player of the game back to back just based on the blocking.
Hey,
but
we'll take it.
Iowa State game blocking had a hit pointer that game. So like, if you saw a catch, I look really goofy running. So like it hurt. But the best part of the game, again, my daughter's going to watch this, but, at the time I was dating an Iowa State cheerleader. So after the game, you know, you meet with the families.
Wow.
This cheerleader runs over, you know, do our, you know, relationship thing. And I got so many side eyes from the Iowa fans, but then like, they're like, oh, cool. He's, you know, dating an Iowa State cheerleader.
Yeah. He's got the,
So there's a coach in high school. You always talk about like when you play a team at prom, you like, you know, spike their punch and steal their dates type of thing. That's what I, you know, felt like I was,
there you go.
Like I was getting,
so. We got him. We got the clones on that one. That's good, man. The ones that mean something, like the story with your grandma, those are always that. There's always something that happens like that. I've had several teammates like that too, and then they play like some insane game. I think I don't want to misspeak, but I believe that the 2015 year undefeated season that we had, I think somebody's grandma passed away. It might have been Josie's grandma passed away that day. Or the day before, and he played big, and then all of a sudden, like, we get that fumble on the goal line, and it was like, then the next week, it like the story was like, it felt like, you know, grandma was there with us in the stands, and I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm like crying in the complex reading the story, like unbelievable.
Yeah.
Earlier,
that happened to me, like when I scored that touchdown, man, I was on the sideline, I was just,
oh yeah,
coming out, man.
Oh, sports brings out emotion in a way that like it's hard to. It's hard to describe. Grant's going through it right now. He's a Colorado sports fan. So he just lost the Avalanche out of the NHL playoffs, but he's still got the Nuggets are going strong. And I think they pulled off an upset, stole one in game one. Didn't they, Grant?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, and this is a little other information for you to fill in what happens here on this show is that, Kluver vowed as a co-host, he was going to be very supportive and support the Denver Nuggets.
I did.
He missed all of our game recently, and then also with the Avalanche, we were up.
That's not true.
2-0 until he fell asleep, and then suddenly the Stars won 3-2.
That's okay. All right.
This isn't about me. This is about you.
No, it is. It is about Trey. I want to get back to Trey. Earlier, you said you had. This is just me being funny now, but you said you struggled to figure out Twitter. It took you 20 minutes when you were looking at that thing, yeah. And I'm confused at how, because on my small amount of research on your LinkedIn, it says you've worked for both Google and now Meta. So how are you the guy that is struggling with social media, Trey?
Well, yeah, none of those are Twitter. He's a company loyal guy.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm terrible with tech. So that's a fair question. Yeah, to this day, I'm still kind of struggle with it. I think Facebook's a little bit better because it kind of lays things out. Instagram, it's just a picture book. So you used to, you know, double click and you're good. But Twitter, man, you have to do a lot of clicks and the right clicks and everything. So, but yeah, I mean, I was kind of obsessed with it for a little bit, you know, cause it's been like 48 hours since I discovered it. But then I scrolled down before the show and I realized it was already, you know, kind of decided, and I didn't get the title as average player most hated, but, hey man, there's always next year.
Is it coming from Ohio Midwest guy? Is it crazy to find yourself out there in California now for like what, a decade plus? Like,
yeah.
Working for those companies.
Yes, yeah, so I was in Austin, Texas for almost 8 years working for Google, and then we just got out to California about 4 years ago.
Oh, okay. So, all right.
Yeah, when we found out we were having a baby, it was like Cleveland, Ohio or Southern California, and you know, I guess weather-wise, you know, California wins that battle every time, but I never imagined myself living in California. I mean, there's such a imposter syndrome because you hear how expensive and, you know, all this stuff, but dude, it's so nice out here.
It's unbelievable. My wife and
what
I.
What part of California are you in?
I'm in Orange County, so it's a little. Okay. Not to get political, but it's a little like a safe haven.
Yeah, it's a good place to live. Yeah.
My wife and I, before our first kid was born, we went to San Diego, and it was, God, it's just perfect every day.
Yeah, dude, San Diego is nice. San Diego is like, if you've never been to Austin, it reminds me of like an Austin, but on the water. So just, you know, small downtown, you could get from one end to the other in 15 minutes, a lot of cool things to do, good restaurants. So
nice. Awesome. You are a father of two. How has that been transitioned from the athlete guy to father? And what do you ever think about like the lessons learned from college, both on and off the field, and what you've taken into your adult life now? Cause I do all the time now that I've been a dad of one and about to be two as we record this in like a week.
Yeah, dude, it's awesome, man. Like, you know, it's the best accomplishment. So, you know, whether my college career is get wrapped up as good, positive, successful, unsuccessful, high school, you know, it had success professionally, like dad life, there's nothing that tops it. And good, bad story, I don't know. I was able to make it to the Iowa UCLA game this past year, and unfortunately we lost, but I, you know, waited out to, you know, see Pat and got to see, you know, Coach Ferentz and everything, and went up to Coach Ferentz, and he, first thing he asked was about the parenthood. I'm like, dude, nothing compares. He's like, right? And even Kirk Ferentz, he greets like nothing even comes close to, you know, being a dad. So I'm loving it, man. I always thought I wanted boys, but having two girls, like, they're just, dude, they're everything. So they're spoiled out of their minds.
I love it. So, I love it. I have one last question. I'm gonna let Grant ask a few. This is how I let him he gets to speak at the end. I have a feeling he's gonna ask the question that I have left. So I just, Grant, take the lead, and if you don't, then I'll ask at the end.
Okay. Well, okay, my question. You mentioned big games from your career. I know you didn't say the Michigan State, the drive, 2009 game winner. This is a misspoken because I did talk to Marvin McNutt one time, but not about this. Can you describe just like what's like either on the sideline or on the field during that situation? You know, a lot of pressure on the season outlook, you know, hostile environment in Michigan State. Like, what's going through the mind of a player, like, from any perspective on the field of what's happening on that last drive of the game?
Yeah, man, I love that question because I was asked it in an interview a few years ago. So I might go really long into this, but so basically I was a stand-in actor for this movie called Draft Day.
Okay, so that's what my question was going to be about. You were a small part in a Hollywood production of Draft Day.
Yeah, and it was really hard to wear because I was like the quarterback for Wisconsin, so putting the jersey on was not the easiest thing. But, you know, in the movie they talked about, you know, this scene where you know, Joe Montana is in the huddle and, you know, they need to drive 90 yards. And, you know, he just approached the huddle. He's like, is that John Hamm in the stands? Like just this straight composure. And I hate to say it, but I guess I don't hate to say it. Like when we were in the huddle for that last drive, that was us. That was Rick Stanzi. Like we were like, we trust each other. We knew we were going to get it done. It's just when we were going to do it, who's going to do it, how we're going to do it type of thing. You know, obviously, you know, the catch that, you know, I was part of that scene, like, you know, it was like, third or fourth down. So it's like the last chance type of thing. But once we got that first down again, we knew we had it in a way. So, obviously we, like the other games that year, we made a lot harder on ourselves than it needed to be because we were, you know, a much better team. But again, I think just, you know, that the callus of the team, we knew we were going to get it done. And, you know, Marvin got it. I was wide open. I'm sure everybody was open type of thing, but, you know, Marvin got it. We won, you know, the huge celebration. I don't know if you saw this in film. It was kind of something that, you know, was on those forums. But, like, I went to the student crowd. I was doing, like, the generative X, like, suck it type of thing. And they're throwing
I love it.
It was glow stick night. So they were throwing glow sticks at me. And those things were pelting me. And
oh, yeah.
Stuff. But yeah, I mean, it was special because, you know, Rick, obviously being the captain, like, you know, it, you know, personally, we trusted our line. Like I think all of our linemen played in the NFL, Moyaki, you know, McNutt, like we had the squad, but then, you know, just having Rick in there and Rick just being Rick. I mean, we knew it was going to happen just when.
He was easy to trust. And he was great when he came on the show too. 7 got 6, one of the best plays still in Iowa history, probably definitely top 10. I would say probably has a claim in the top 5. There's a lot of really good ones. But yeah, then we can finish up here.
Sorry, I gotta hear about this draft day thing before I even ask.
How did this come up? So I'm scrolling your Instagram today, just like, hey, I do it for every guest that comes on. Like, maybe we'll find something interesting, and I find you in a Wisconsin jersey, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like, I don't think he transferred. Like, the transfer portal was not nearly as big. Yeah. I don't think there was some rogue year where Trey was a Wisconsin Badger. So what is going on here? And then I read the caption, and I was like, huh. This is crazy. So how did this opportunity to play a small part in this movie come about?
Well, I was down in Amish country, you know, living my best life. And my sister texts me. They're like, hey, like, there's a movie with Kevin Costner. They're casting ex Division I NFL players to play some of these parts. You should go. I was like, oh, that's really cool. The day came, and like self-negotiation kicked in. I'm like, I'm not going to go there. Like, I'll probably get hurt, you know, whatever. But then, you know, it's supposed to start at 11. I showed up at 11:45. So eventually I'm just like, you know, let's just do it. So I showed up, and one of my buddies, Robbie Parrish, was there. He played at Notre Dame and I think for the Browns for a little bit. And he's like, oh man, you got to go. Just go talk to the casting director. So I talked to him. He's like, do you play quarterback? I'm like, yeah, in high school, I played quarterback. So he had me like throw a couple of balls and everything. And then for the next 2 weeks, I was like training the actor of like, you know, how to like look like an athlete, look like a quarterback type of thing. But yeah, I got the part. It was a 2-day shoot. It was at Kent State University, and they had to like make the field look like it's Ohio State. They had all the fans in like Ohio State, you know, uniforms and everything. But yeah, it was just a you know, 8 hours of me getting my ass kicked by Ohio State, you know, the second time.
Awesome. Love it.
That's great. How many Houston Texans were in this movie? Because Arian Foster is in the movie too.
Arian Foster was in there. He wasn't in Cleveland though. So like we did like an after party. So I got to, you know, meet up with like Jennifer Gardner. Chadwick Boseman was one of the guys that was, so it was like, I had Nate Oliver, like Ohio State DN, just getting, you know, basically free clear to just knock me out type of thing, you know, for the shoots. And then they, you know, Chad wanted to do his own son, so he was coming and doing it. Josh Pence was the double I was doing for. And so he was dating like this Abigail Spencer actress at the time. So we all got to go downtown Cleveland and show them, you know, God's country. But yeah, it was a good time, man. It was a 6-second claim the fame.
That's wild, dude.
Now, deep down inside, was there any part of you that was like, hey, maybe I crush this, maybe start doing commercials, maybe a sitcom later? Like all of a sudden we're hanging out in Tinseltown.
I know. No, it was a good one and done type of thing. I did like, there's another movie that came in the tongues. I think Cleveland, they're doing some like sort of like tax free shooting. So they did like Avengers there. They did, I can't even remember this other movie. I was dating a girl at the time. So she roped me into being an extra on this other movie. Which is funny because
two movies.
Yeah. And what? I can't remember the name. It was called Fun Size. And I'm just in the back, like walking.
You were in Fun Size.
Yeah. I'm just in the back walking. And so my, you know, girlfriend who ropes me in, we both get casted, but different days. So I get the part where I'm just like walking across the scene. And then if you go to the party scene, you see a girl like grinding on top of a guy. That's her.
Ah, tough.
So we didn't make it. I married somebody else, but,
oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
That was my start to Hollywood.
Well, what's funny is you ended up in LA anyway. So, yeah. Huh.
Hey, directors are, there's a lot of famous directors.
I was going to say, I wouldn't rule out a third movie in Trey's future.
Spielberg's big fan.
Well, Trey, it was a pleasure.
Hold on. I want to ask one more. I got two more questions.
Oh, okay. Two more.
So as a former Houston Texan, I have to know, who should wear the Houston Oilers jerseys, the Tennessee Titans or the Houston Texans? Who should get to wear those?
It's got to stay in Houston, man. It makes most sense. I understand like the ownership and piece, but like, I don't know, like the, you know, I love the Texans. Like they took really good care of me through my injury and, you know, just good people. Like it's ran very well, similar to in Iowa. But the problem is like Texans, like you're really just pigeonholing yourself into like one kind of group of audience, fan base, whatever. Like, so Oilers, you might get fans in, you know, Oklahoma and North Dakota and Alaska, but like Texans, like I think that's one of the reasons why they're like bottom 10% fan base, because you literally have to be in Texas or that's it, and you're competing against the Cowboys. So, but yeah, to answer your question, man, I wish they would have stayed with the Oilers or bought it or something.
And then my last question is, what is the record on the pop shot, and could we get you shooting?
Oh, pop shot. Oh yeah.
And do we could we get you getting a shot off here real quick?
I mean, I got my business schedule.
Dude, he's gonna hurt. He'll hurt his shoulder. We can't hurt this guy on the recording.
Did you guys pay my injury severance?
No, we can't. I can't even hardly pay this guy to be a part of the operation we got going here. But
it's nice because it's an Iowa one, and you know, the kids come over and play, and I feel like a Caitlin Clark because I'm like just reaching over and dunking. Like, you know, my shooting percentage is like 80% on that thing. So,
I'd love to hear it. Well, Trey, we appreciate you making time. It's been a pleasure to get to hear your story and tell it. This is why we do this podcast, to bring on guys that I didn't even get to play with or know, but Hawkeye Nation, certainly there will be plenty who remember the name and probably didn't get to ever know this much about you, and now they do. So thank you so much for coming on, man.
Absolutely, man. I love that. I'm getting better at the interviews. I don't know if you watched some on YouTube when I played, but the funny story is, you know, we had mopeds, and you know, I'm driving Paul Cheney to practice, and I forgot it was a Tuesday like media day, and I'm like, oh shit, because I didn't like talking, man. I didn't like, if you ask anything, like I never talked at Iowa. And he's like, man, you really hate the media. So you know, with medical sales and all this, like I'm getting better at talking.
Oh dude, you're fantastic. I wouldn't have known one little bit. No, you're fantastic. I know the fans are gonna love it. I enjoyed it. And you are welcome back anytime.
Awesome, man. Well, yeah, next time you get Pat on here, we can have a little roommate
get together. Absolutely. That would be great. For those listening, thank you guys for listening. We're into the 600s now. We're trekking towards 700. And we'll be here every Monday, Thursday, just like we always are. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.